Hello, we are here. We are slightly early for a Thursday, but here we are.
We are, yes.
We are also sadly Trigless, for he's bedridden with the most rot man flu.
Trig has the man flu, I'm afraid. So no Trig today. We are, as Evelyn said, Trigless.
Yes, Trigless in somewhere. I don't know. I've run out of some sort of place to.
You've run out of puns. You trying to make
Yeah.
a Sleepless in Seattle joke?
That was.
Triglis in New York. Dear. Right, let's have a look. Before we dive into our topic, I'll do our normal YouTube-y stuff then. We are still monetized somehow. So if you guys want to support us, the best way to do it is the link in the description through the Streamlabs. We do also have super chats available, and you can become a member if you want to support us monthly. I've looked into things like Subscribestar and Patreon, but those we're not really at the critical mass for those, really, I would say.
I'll be honest, I think
But
that if we're to do a paid anything, I would like to paywall content behind a Substack subscription, I
yes,
think.
we do also have the that's a good way to do it. We do also have the Substack. More writing came out today from you. I need to show that myself, but that's antipolitics.substack.com. I have another big piece coming up in the near future if I ever finish it.
I forgot to. I'll need to go back and make sure to link your own piece on permissible activism under mine, as it was slightly related. I thought you might enjoy it for that reason.
Yes, I did enjoy it. It's a good article. Go read it. Go read it. But not now because we're streaming. It's I don't know. Do you want to introduce this topic? This is kind of your baby,
I mean, I
in a
suppose
way.
as I'd like to think that I'm obviously not the only person that has ever been critical of crypto,
The
but
crypto critic.
I have not seen another person who has connected the stuff about maybe more blockchain technology in a general sense, which we're gonna get into, and maybe it's worth kind of explaining in the forefront that the implicit assumption here is either from the get-go, blockchain technology and its invention or its early uptaking or at some point between then and now been the thing that the sort of global elites, your World Economic Forum types, we're going to get in a clip here in a minute from the World Government Summit 2022, the top flight, Council of 300, whatever you call it, those people who are actually orchestrating events that we know. They seem to look at blockchain as one of their key things for the coming sort of what I've kind of been referring to as social digitization, the complete and utter digitization of every or as many interaction as possible that you have in normal day society.
It's become a ubiquitous buzzword. You see it. You see local health authorities talking about it.
Yeah.
You see basically every level of bureaucracy within modern government, and especially modern supranational organizations, talking about the magical blockchain.
But that
It is it.
I would say that people have already noticed, I think, probably what the theme is in chat to some extent here, that cryptocurrencies since probably about 2018, 2019 have been a growing subject, especially in libertarian spaces and in some dissident spaces. And you've got the other side to it, which they don't talk about, which is the weird like finance bro space that's paused as hell, that's been talking about crypto for years, but that's a different question. But the it has been sold to us as the way out. This is how dissidents will take down
No, you're not using the right phrase. The correct phrase is crypto fixes this.
Bitcoin fixes this, yes.
Yeah, here's how Bitcoin fixes this.
And for the
So a great comment from Travis Wolf in the chat there. It says, I'm not as autistic as some about it, but my unga bunga senses activate my fight or flight whenever I hear about crypto.
yes.
It's a great one up. I think I'm the same way in that for a long time I couldn't articulate what my problem with crypto was, but it was my unga bunga brain going, there's no
Yeah.
right.
Well, see, that was for me, it was the reading so much of Francis and Kaczynski at the time and just watching this thing sort of grow and develop. It was like, oh no, it's gonna happen. But it it would seem to me that essentially, at some point, there was a subversion of the ownership of crypto and blockchain infrastructure, if it wasn't already being developed as a tool to be used against us from the very start. I mean, I don't know if that's the case. It might be, but to some extent, it kind of doesn't matter anymore. Because billions and billions of billions and billions of pounds have been thrown at infrastructure that uses blockchain. You know, it's like trying to suggest that this bank will set us free because it uses MasterCard, and that by throwing money at X bank or investing in X property, you're actually bolstering MasterCard as the proprietor of the transaction. And in the same sense, with all the investment that goes on in crypto, people are essentially, you know, investing in the greater sort of crypto space and blockchain technology as a whole.
Yes. The thing that crypto reminds me of is Tor. It reminds me of the shadowy kind of origins of things like the VPN technology and the distributed network technology. No one quite knows where crypto came from and Bitcoin came from and the standards came from. There's lots of people who claimed it. Is it like Nakatomi or whatever his name is? Or yeah. He had some generic Japanese named guy who supposedly came up with it. But no one can figure out who he is, even whether to come up with it or not. And you'd think with how successful it's been, someone would come out and be like, I am Mr. Crypto. Give me lots of consulting money.
Yes.
if it was genuine, you'd have some tech bro somewhere who'd go around yelling at everyone who would listen. You know, I invented crypto, right? But that's not what's happened. What's happened is that we have the shadowy origins of something we don't quite understand.
Yes.
And no one seems to quite understand.
I mean, if I don't know, could I possibly take liberties to maybe briefly go through a paragraph or two of an article I happened to write in May of last year?
Yes, we'll do the big told you so.
Right, this
a large told
is,
you
yeah,
so.
From an article I wrote is cryptocurrencies is surrogate activism, which argued a lot of stuff about economics because I was only really just coming to the connection of the two at the time, and you can see that basically in the way that I wrote this article, because as I kept thinking about it, I was like, wait, hold on a second. But first example, this is one in which I'm sure others have noticed it, is that Bitcoin fixes this mindset. It's a highly technologistic line of thinking, much like a deferral to bureaucracy or public property is the solution of any of the conflicts we face within interpersonal day-to-day functions of society. Once again, blind faith and complex language has been used to obfuscate from the genuine issues of currency and the true effort and actions required to change the state of affairs. Instead, a technological development has been lifted to the status of a panacea, whilst those that propagate its tenets make a quick buck on the side. And to top it off, as more and more people jump on the bandwagon, speculative gains ever increase, drawing in more and more members of the crypto-initiated, and leading to an ever more destructive collapse when the bubble does eventually burst. But as mentioned before, the loss of investments will mean nothing when it's fully understood as to what the wide-scale adoption of cryptos will enable within society. Most cryptos are designed to allow the user some level of anonymity, whilst the token itself can log important attributes about the digital location, recipient, and even products exchanged in any transaction. As a method for keeping track of business activity or one's own personal finance, this is a useful feature, and one which physical mediums of exchange cannot perform. However, as mentioned before, this information can be retroactively uncovered by security forces and state actors with relative ease and requires very little cooperation. What then is a state of play when crypto platforms and developers choose to or are strong-armed into complicity with the state? The data available to the state would be disastrous to dissident movements which have used crypto to organise their finances. It would furthermore be naive to assume that if crypto is adopted further within society, that tokens centred around anonymity and protection would be accepted as legal tender, with which one could purchase their basic necessities. It would be a clear continuation of the war on cash, and the forced identification of every consumer who wishes to purchase menial goods. This becomes all the more concerning when we consider the talks of vaccine passports and social credit scores, as to me, the infrastructure of crypto is almost pre-built for the adaptation into a social credit score style system. Within the UK, there have already been meetings and outlines drawn up for digital identity systems based on a wide range of data referred to as attributes, of which it would be the duty of each citizen to provide in full, with full honesty when requested by any public or private institution tied into the system. For those unaware of these plans, and then I went on to link both of these documents, which we've talked before in stream, but I mean, just reading that back there, I don't want to be like, ooh, I told you so, but I'm almost kind of shocked by how, well, I was kind of on the money with that there, and it's kind of worrying.
Yeah. Well, you were saying this at a time when really the mindset that has taken over, I think, some in the right, which is a healthy suspicion of Bitcoin has emerged, and of crypto in general. You should also, like, rotate Trig so he's laying down. Because he's laying down. But it is very prescient, but it's very obvious to anyone who's been watching that this stuff can be, even if it wasn't invented for the purpose of it, even if we never say with any certainty what the original purpose of cryptocurrency was, it certainly is very adaptable to something like a social credit score. It's also very easy for the ledger systems to be adapted to that. Like, it's difficult to express to people because most people who are quote unquote crypto believers don't understand what, like, blockchain is magic to them.
Yes.
They do not understand. It's literally, it's a digital ledger. I don't think you know what a ledger is. It's a digital record of transactions that is computed in a distributed manner, and you get your crypto because you help maintain this network. If you apply that to,
it's like, it's an inverse tax for being part of you're under the, because this term will come up later on as we get into further parts of this, by entrusting in a third party, the holder of the ledger, to monitor the transaction, you're being paid in kind for that. So people are, you know, by already engaging in crypto in that fashion, people are already being pre-prepared to engage with an economic function that provides for them merely just for using their network.
It became very, very obvious to me when governments and NGOs and supranational organizations started talking about crypto, and especially about the blockchain, what form this would take.
Mm-hmm.
Because what they're going to do is they're going to create a cloud-based digital identity that is has all the trappings of the Bitcoin ledger. It is basically, it's very difficult to falsify. It's very difficult to defraud because everyone supposedly has, you know, access to a piece or a copy of it. It's verified by all these distributed computing centers. And they're going to make you, basically by law, compute your own, like, digital prison yourself. There'll be a little app you'll have on all government certified devices that'll essentially be like a Bitcoin miner, and they'll make you maintain the digital ID system yourself.
Yes,
with
by,
your own
by
devices.
Using it. You will, you know, use your digital ID and you will get your fifth Starbucks coffee for free. I mean, that's literally how they're going to sell it to folk. And there's a little bit I wrote in the notes that we've got here that I just wanted, you know, explain just before we get into some of the, because there's a clip we've got that's great, but just the notion that, you know, there is a number of possibilities, or possibly the combination of the two at once, which is just as likely, that crypto and blockchain will be so secure that dissidents can be locked out indefinitely, possibly without even requiring human input, in the same way Twitter bans via algorithm, and this would tie in with your credit score. And there is a Blair Institute article that basically talks about this, we will get into, but there is also the possibility that crypto / blockchain will be weak in all or certain areas, allowing for fraud and scams to come ever more invasive and clever. And we can see that on the sort of personal level, especially as we move into the more digital economy, the abilities to scam folk nowadays are ridiculous. So there arises the possibility that, you know, both of these situations can be true at once. So you're allowing for, you know, greater levels of almost anarcho-tyranny as central institutions control digitized society stringently. Meanwhile, individuals are powerless and helpless in fighting frauds and scams, despite being granted a new digital sovereignty, as we'll see the phrasing arrive.
We'll see as well. It's a situation in which people are less safe. I think quote-unquote government crypto is obviously less safe than cash, and is less safe than, you know, the more centralized financial institution banking that we have now. It's a system in which they don't want to engage with it. They don't want to undertake the work. They'll make you have, you know, it'll be done algorithmically, automatically. There'll be no humans involved. Just people, I hate the Antichrist in the chat. This is the this is the tone that we need here.
Yes, me too. I
I
hate the
appreciate
Antichrist.
this, but it's very much the self-governing system. It is a, when you see them talk about the blockchain, they talk about it very explicitly as the digital panopticon. It's this self-governing, self-regulating system in which people will have all their transactions monitored and certified and put on record for all time. And there'll be these massive number-crunching AIs that will attempt to single out who isn't dangerous in society through their purchasing habits and link it to their, you know, social media habits and create these mass digital identities for people where they can be algorithmically removed from society if, you know, if they buy a pineapple on a Tuesday from a supermarket in a certain location. Well, there'll be some AI somewhere that thinks that that means you're a terrorist.
Well, that or you'll have overclocked your carbon credits. I think I would.
Yes.
I don't want to keep the roasty on screen for too much, so we might be quiet for a minute or two here. We listen to, is it Pippa Malgram, or whatever her name is, from the World Government Summit. This is maybe just only from a week or two ago, which is really funny, because it's, you know, as I've thought of doing this stream and we try to do it with someone else and it didn't line up. But it's literally unfolding as we speak about it, which makes it all the more interesting. But yeah, she was speaking of the World Government Summit. And I'll let it play out. Oh, if it decides to.
He said, our job is to make sure the question never arises. But the...
Oh, sorry, I don't know what's happened here with us. I guess because I played and paused it before.
Oh. Well, it may be a bit late for that. I remember talking... talking to an Australian diplomat at one point about this break.
Is Telegram shitting the bed a little bit? Sometimes videos don't like playing through Telegram.
Yeah, this is really annoying because I couldn't find this video elsewhere.
Between the US and China, and said, you know, both sides are going to say who's...
Yeah, I'm afraid this isn't a tech issue on our end. It seems to be Telegram's freezing. Mm-hmm.
And he said our job is to make sure...
Is this because I'm possibly trying to play this and put it on stream at the same
But the question
time.
Has arisen. And so I think...
No, our internet's very beefy. I think this is an issue with Telegram itself.
I think we have to go deeper. And it's not about the US...
You do find that sometimes with trying to play Telegram videos.
Yeah, I don't know.
You know, technical difficulties.
Yeah, I'm not sure really what to do. I don't know if we maybe just come back to that at some point.
Maybe, I don't know. It's just I always have horrible issues playing videos over Telegram.
Okay. Well, instead,
it doesn't like giving you the bandwidth.
We might go to this first. Anyway, the thing she says in that video, she talks about essentially establishing a social credit score like system. And a modern and a new type of accounting, so that we no longer have to run to either one of the poles, being nowadays China and America. We will instead have the global system of accounting and the new global system of finance, and it will be called blockchain. Because I sat there listening to that the other day in Telegram, and I was like, no chance. She's not just gone and said it. It's gonna make my job so easy.
If you want to link where that is in the chat to people, though, so they can maybe go and watch it afterwards.
Yes, I will do that just now.
Because it does seem like Telegram is not serving video particularly well right now. So apologies for that. But
yes, please
but
do.
We will soldier on.
And watch that clip.
But... Yeah, basically what she is saying is that the blockchain will become the distributed financial system for the globe. Yeah, that is very stuttery for me as well.
It's a shame. And she does also drop the fact that, like, she's getting this story about the original issue of, you know, polar finance, or whatever phrase they use, from her father, who managed the setup of the Bretton Woods system after the Nixon government departed from gold.
Small world, eh?
Yeah. But there is this article here from Larry Fink of BlackRock. And then Oak Trees, Howard Marks, basically two men that manage probably about, I don't know, a worrying percentage of the global economy.
I think a lot of our viewers will know who BlackRock is.
Yes.
So it's yeah, we're having a BlackRock exemptive. Who's the other guy from, did you say, sorry?
Is it Oaktree?
Yes.
Which is basically another just big hedge fund, as far as I'm aware. But he has some stuff in here about how, like, yeah, you know, globalization shaped the world for the last 30 years, but it's now coming to an end. That's the view of the two world's best known investors, blah, 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 blah. Russian invasion of Ukraine has put an end to the globalization we've experienced over the last 3 decades, which is an interesting statement. And it is one, it is one that will relate to a stream we will be having in a couple weeks about an issue I think is relatively connected, shall we say. But,
well, the big thing to talk about here as well that hovers in the background with all of this is the miraculous recovery of the ruble's value to pretty much exactly its pre-war level. It is currently up at basically a penny, which seems low, but that's what it was in February.
Mm.
And that's around about what it was in October last year. So the ruble has stabilized mostly because Russia has actually insulated quite well from the West at the moment. And also it's promised to back its currency at least partially with gold. I'm not sure how concrete that is. But that's something, we won't be talking about that today. I just want to keep that in the back of people's minds because this is what's scaring a lot of these people.
Well, you'd say that. I think these people knew it was coming. There's a statement here from, I think this is from Howard Marks. The recognition of these negative aspects of globalization has now caused the pendulum to swing back towards local sourcing. This isn't true. What's really true here is that 2 years of lockdown caused a relatively unsustainable, but for economic reasons, not environmental reasons, global supply chain. And that then stopping a lot of the work that goes into keeping that infrastructure afloat whilst demanding more of it, more from it than has ever been demanded before, well, of course it's going to collapse. So this whole moralizing about the negative aspects of globalization is just all crap.
Yeah, because they're the ones who've caused the collapse. It's like, well, we've, the system's collapsing that we've collapsed, and we need to replace it with a new system, which we are even more tightly in control of.
I mean, and I would say at least they're honest to suggest that, you know, but what exactly is globalization? Economists at the Peterson Institute define it as the growing interdependence of the world's economies, people and cultures, which has then been a bit mask off for the moment. You know, they're specifying it as the interdependence, the fact that if you were to fragment these structures, that the thing would fall apart.
Do we have, what is it?
Yeah, I would say the main thing, he talks about some other things about global energy markets, crude, inflation, but the thing that I found interesting here is the bit at the bottom where BlackRock's Larry Fink, who is now obviously the vanguard for Bitcoin activism, because of course he is, BlackRock's Fink, who previously suggested Bitcoin might be worthless, now thinks digital currencies may have a role to play in a deglobalizing world. He said the war will force countries to reconsider their currency dependency. A global digital payment system thoughtfully designed can enhance the settlement of international transactions while reducing the risk of money laundering and corruption. And then, you know, Marx, he goes on to say, after many decades of globalization and cost minimization, I think we're about to find investment opportunities in the swing
that's
towards...
That's the big... Notice when they said about that, about money laundering and criminality and things like that. What they're doing is they're flipping the script here.
Mm.
Anyone who is an advocate for cash is going to be called a criminal.
Yeah.
That is, I think, the main vector they're going to use in future.
The thing I just, like, Fink says, who previously, you know, he's suggesting it may have a role to play in a deglobalizing world. And then, verbatim, this is his words, a global digital pay system.
That they're talking about, you know, a one world currency.
Yeah. Or a full nuance, you know, a certain nuance, like neutral global finance system that no one really owns.
The neutral technocratic system of finance. There's nobody behind it, that no government controls it, you know, no election and no regime change in a country could affect it. It is beholden to itself.
Yeah.
It is like the ultimate globalist technocrat
it's
solution.
Like Star Wars space credits. Like, what do they actually mean?
It just hangs in the background there. Like, who benefits from this? Who controls this? And every country on Earth would be forced to use it if they wish to trade internationally.
Yes.
In this increasingly interdependent world, you know, with these increasingly roundabout processes, as we've talked about before, you will end up with especially smaller countries. There's a lot of stuff about emerging markets when you hear the World Economic Forum stuff.
I was going to
and this really would make it impossible.
Link 9 from the this is the one that they use the terminology of democratizing finance, and they talk about the what they call the unbanked.
The unbanked.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. I know about this, because this is something, again, this is Coinbase using World Economic Forum language.
Yes, this is also them directly working hand in hand with US financial regulators, as they go on to say, because there's a few little interesting ones in here where, you know, for an institution that people have been buying, selling dissident currency on, these people are using very non-dissident language.
Well, the democratization of banking is a big thing in the World Economic Forum's like 2030 stuff.
Mm.
They talk about the fact that digital identity is explicitly used as a way for people to get these, you know, international bank accounts, and the two go hand in hand with each other. And the, you know, they're couching this in the terms of, you know, Pajit from Bangladesh will be able to get a national crypto account, and therefore his life will be better because he's got his UN verified TM digital ID.
Yeah.
He can prove who he is to the system. He can become a fully integrated.
He's the next Harriet Tubman.
Yeah. I love that analogy. I've heard you use it before, but I love that analogy that they're bringing in all of the field Negroes.
Yeah,
and making them pay tax.
They're going to make the Pajits free by regulating them all. But that's specifically what they're talking about here. You know, today we're pleased to introduce our new regulatory framework entitled Digital Asset Policy Proposal: Safeguarding America's Financial Leadership, aka keeping the Teed Bummers still in charge. You know, isn't the whole thing with crypto the fact that it's not got a regulatory framework? You know, why would it need one?
Well, that's the whole thing. You get these people who clap like seals when Government X or Institute X, like, we're going to accept Bitcoin as legal tender. It's like, no, you idiots, that means they're going to regulate it. Like, why would you want a government to recognize your dissident cryptocurrency as legal tender? That means it can be taxed.
Mm. A number of us have been working diligently on this for some time, consulting with experts, crypto builders, opinion leaders, and policymakers from across the country. We've also studiously read the commentary produced by our peers and others who are pushing the debate forward in thought-provoking and creative ways. This process of investigation and discovery has been remarkable, eye-opening, and invaluable to help us think deeply about the potential of these new and uniquely democratizing financial innovations.
Oh no, there's a lot of waffle there.
Yeah.
I think the big one here, if you look at the pillars are where this gets very interesting.
Is this further down?
Yes, it is. There's pillar one and pillar two.
Would you like to read
which
this?
I can read this. Pillar one is regulate digital assets under a separate framework.
They come up for your NFTs.
Yeah, the crypto economy is defined by two concurrent innovations, blah, 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 blah. One of which is they're basically talking about bringing crypto into the financial system.
Yes.
Under the purview of existing regulation and basically making it a parallel securities market, but one that is, again, wholly controlled by central governments and especially the US government. And pillar two is designate one regulator for digital asset markets.
Yes.
They like I said, they are talking explicitly here about centralizing the digital asset market, like you would buy credit default swaps, like you would buy gold futures,
it's
like you would buy any other financial
product.
It's
kind of further than that, though, because when you really look at Klaus Schwab, and I can't remember the other guy's name, He's the guy that does a lot of talks with him. Bob Murphy was going over some of this stuff recently. Their view is they're looking to... They want to decentralize society by centralizing everything in an invisible and, like, electronic manner so that you just don't see it. You know, it's just like they're basically pulling the ones and zeros over our eyes and hoping we don't notice it.
I mean, what will happen is you'll have this invisible layer that is a central governing body. They will become effectively the world sovereign of finance. And you won't notice because you have all these interoperable systems that to the end user at first on a purely naive level might seem great. I can order my trainers from the Bangladeshi children semi-directly, guys. Isn't this amazing? I can pay them in Schwab coin. And they can stitch me my dream trainers, and they can be shipped by a liner company that's owned by the World Bank, and uses all like Egyptian slave labor or whatever that's brought through North Africa. And isn't this amazing? It's just this. You're right. It's this palm of your hand digital wall of these massive creaking global systems that will have this veneer of crypto over them, so you don't realize like the centralized nightmare that's happening to you. That you'll have institutions that effectively have full control over the quote unquote world economy.
It's the language that you pillar three, protect and empower holders of digital assets. And then the first one is enhance transparency through appropriate disclosure requirements, basically a social credit score.
Well, it's just they're talking about democratization, and in the same in this like the pillar two, I can't get over it. Like, we're going to democratize cryptocurrency by designating a single regulator to, and in their words, avoid fragmentation. You're having a crypto supposed to be about distributed networks of resilience, and you're talking about the fact that you don't want any fragmentation. That is a complete reversal of the language of any previous like Bitcoin or crypto advocacy.
Well, it's really ridiculous. What gets you thinking. Like, are the people who shell Bitcoin on Twitter and whatever, like, are they in on it? I mean, some of them must be, surely, because this is. You know, this isn't just a coincidence. There can't have been all that activism involved around crypto and the growing social media movement of it, and then shifting into this. It didn't happen overnight.
Yeah.
So there must have been some people making sure that handover went nice and smoothly. I mean, look at some big figure like Safedin. You know, the guy that's connected to some of the Mises Institute stuff. He has hundreds of thousands of followers on Twitter. He's writing books. He's doing this, that, and the next thing. He's talking to bloody Jordan Peterson. However, what he has sold everyone is, you know, golden handcuffs you can't even wear because they only exist in an NFT picture.
Yeah. The whole NFT thing is just even funnier. I think NFTs were the turning point where lots of people went, hang on a minute.
Yeah.
Hang on a minute. This is ridiculous. We look like absolute fools here. I know NFTs just became kind of a meme, but they really are like the smoking gun of like, this is digital tulips. This is ridiculous. Your the whole monkey picture thing. But it is a little bit too little too late. People don't also realize that a huge proportion of the crypto market now is owned by hedge funds.
Yes. Well, there are also... I mean, I mentioned it earlier. I might as well grab it up. I think it's link to on the sheet. This guy Patrick Hansen on Twitter, whoever he is.
Yes,
he's just some replaceable bug man. He's probably a composite image. Like, if you look at that and you think that's a real person, I'm sorry, but I've got a bridge to sell you. But, you know, the econ. Committee of the EU Parliament just voted against the de facto proof of work ban, 32 against 24 in favour. Big relief and political success for the Bitcoin and crypto community in the EU. And he's just got loads of stuff here about the vote itself and some of his other work that he's done. But the thing I really want to look into here is... where is it? There is. The official press release from the EU on this... debate that they had, and it is essentially just some nonsense thing about, you know, Bitcoin mining or proof of work contract holding was supposedly such a burden, or is going to become such a burden, that they are already stepping in on putting green carbon regulations on crypto infrastructure. And that this dude on Twitter, who's a big activist for it, and is like, woohoo, Bitcoin, is celebrating it. So, like, you know, what's the deal here?
Yeah, new rules to boost benefits and curb threats. He is celebrating a uniform legal framework for crypto assets in the EU. Include crypto asset mining in UK taxonomy of sustainable activities by 2025 to reduce carbon. Why is he celebrating this? He's celebrating the regulation of his crypto.
Yeah.
And it's folding into the eco suicide pact. I think to answer your question, I think a lot of people who are analysts were kind of in on this. A lot of influencers, in quotes, were just bought off. They were sponsored by these exchanges, by these startup companies who have like very iffy trails of money, by the way. If you wanted to promote an agenda through like opaque means, crypto is a great way to do it.
We
can't think that the system hasn't been infested by government interests with huge amounts of money to throw around. Because the power imbalance there is far too great for them not to have done that.
Yeah.
And the deliberate anonymity at this point benefits them as they slowly erode it away.
Yeah, they have been able to build a system of enslavement in secret, and then they will force it upon us where we will then no longer be able to hold secrets. You know, in a certain kind of sense, it is that sort of maniacal and evil.
The crypto ledgers that are set up by central banks will inevitably be readable by them.
Mm.
They will not be secret. In fact, it will be built into them explicitly to prevent, to in quotes, prevent criminality and terrorism.
Well, it really will be a public ledger then, won't it?
Yes, it will literally be a public ledger, and it will have a nothing to hide, nothing to fear message behind it. The government at any point, at any time, can go in and track the entire financial history of any human being. And anyone who was born after like the 2030s will have everything that is spent on them or spent by them held in a folder by the government.
Mm.
And that will be analyzed by some AI program somewhere to figure out if they should be allowed to participate in certain aspects of the social structure.
Mm.
It will essentially be stratified by the machine. It is nightmare territory, but it is explicitly where they're going.
Well, see, I like the fact that but it's convenient that they mention the fact that you're reducing the carbon footprint. Because if you grab the Poseidon link that is in there, I think it's number 16 or something. Clearing some links out.
Yes, I have that.
I'll need to resize this for the the OBS window, or I'll just zoom out, that'll be easier.
It's kind of annoying when you have so many different page widths. This is a site that's obviously been optimized for mobile first.
Well, see, this is a site that's remained relatively untouched, to be honest. I'm not too sure what's going on with it, because when you look through it, there really isn't too much going on. But Poseidon, for what I can work out, is some form of think tank, NGO kind of thing that is working with different organisations. I think they almost explicitly state it somewhere in here. Essentially to use blockchain technology to fight climate change. And I've got an idea what that might mean. But on the face of it, they don't really do a good job of explaining it at all. So to me, really, it can only mean that companies are using payment handling infrastructure that allows them, or not allows them, but allows some organization above that to control the carbon credits of consumers.
I don't know if you have this link or not. I'll put it in the stream resources channel. But there's quite literally, there's one for the World Economic Forum from June 2021, which is literally, blockchain can help us beat climate change. Here's how.
Oh, no, I know there is some of that stuff, and I think I've got some of that in some of the other links. But it's just the fact that this thing's from like 2018. You know, 2018, there were government implemented projects in Liverpool City Council that used blockchain to fight you know, that
the issue here is it might just be buzzword soup. It might be some outside company has come in or some NGO promising the earth and it's not been updated because the whole thing fell apart.
No, no.
Because there were a lot of bridges being sold.
But just the fact that the two things are mentioned in connection with one another.
Yes.
It makes me at least suspicious.
The thing is, it's like throw a dart. There's dozens of these initiatives, both on a national, on an international, a national, and a local level, that is being done by local councils, local governments. It's all like NGO and government linked as well. There's very little of this going on from private industry, really. In fact, what is going on, I think, almost feels like it's the eco-force stuff.
It's
when all these businesses have to come up with eco-plans because they're scared they're going to get, you know, run down by the government at some point.
It's the public-private partnership.
Yes, that was it is the public-private partnership.
Well, because you can go straight to the horse's mouth, which is this World Economic Forum PDF on advancing digital agency, the power of data intermediaries, and is at most a lot of buzzword soup.
Which link is this, sir? I don't think I have this one.
This one is link.
I've got it. It's link 6.
Yes.
I do have this up. Sorry, I have a huge amount of tabs open for this because we have a lot of sources. It might just be worth just publishing the Google Docs.
Yeah, no, I was going to say that to you after the stream just so people can get like the Telegram snippets and stuff that are in there.
I will put that in a pinned comment on the video if you're watching the VOD, and I will also put that as a community post as well. So people will have access to this.
Cool.
But yes, this is the advancing digital. I think we've used this one before. In a minor context.
Yes, it's just that this is where the language is coming directly from. I mean, they talk about the trust gap. Where is it here? You know, we've got some intro stuff. The challenge: human technology interaction in the data value chain. The trust gap in data sharing. Our days are filled with myriad discrete data collection moments. Even when we have genuine intent to affirmatively consent to each moment of data collection, it is practically impossible to do so. No individual has the time to provide affirmative consent on a near constant basis. This reality arguably undermines our individual agency. Which is an admittance that man is not capable of being adapted with technology in his current state. So both man and the technology must be developed and changed so that they can be adapted to one another.
Oh, sorry, I was muted there. The admission here as well is that there is a need for an overarching data collection framework.
Yeah.
What they're talking about here in soft language is the fact that they want to bring into the public realm what people like Facebook have been doing for the best part of a decade.
Yes.
Which is... also links in with the UK government. I know we've talked about this a lot of times. You guys should hopefully know about this by now. The attributes framework. The digital agency stuff very much sounds like an attributes framework in that they want to centralize and, you know, create a quote-unquote neutral framework for all the different data that all these different places collect. And instead of being distributed between all these different data providers and wholesalers and marketing companies, it will be centralized, regulated, filed, ordered, and accessed by a central, not even government authority, but world authority.
Yeah.
But see, that just so happens to have complete access to all of it.
The thing to me was that people who were crypto advocates, but also like hardcore libertarians, people who have, or at least supposedly, like, do their reading and they get into their hopper and whatever else, they would tell me that Bitcoin is good because you don't have to trust the other party you're exchanging with, which on a praxeological sort of level really irks me. I don't like the idea of let's technologically develop a currency so we don't have to trust the other party. And that the fact that whether those people know it or not, they're basically talking about what the World Economic Forum wants to supply them, because no single cryptocurrency or cryptocurrency exchange for that matter could offer you that infrastructure. But an institution with a line straight to the IMF, they would have no problem doing it. And I think it connects almost to the thing that we'll look at briefly in a minute. But they talk about digital sovereignty. It would seem to me that digital sovereignty is freedom from organic interpersonal trust. You know, you now fully trust machines, and that is your digital sovereignty, which on a, you know, right down to like a sort of metaphysical level, it actually gives me the heebie-jeebies. It's, I hate the Antichrist sort of material.
It's like full communist machine gods is what it is.
Mm.
It's this idea that there will be a neutral system, a neutral manager out there, an arbiter, that will be able to oversee what isn't good economic activity. Because that's what this is all predicated on. These people aren't talking about a market. Yeah. Let's not for a minute pretend that these people are talking about an international free market of digital currencies, because that's never what they've been talking about. These people are, you know, they are beyond Keynesian in how they see the financial system. So what they want to do really is have the tools. This really, it's something we've talked about previously, but this is the socialist supposedly answer to the information and calculation problems.
I think
their idea is that if they can track every transaction, every moment of every day, that they can manage the economy.
See, I don't think it's so much that they want to calculate it, it's that they want to have all the benefits of what seems like, you know, individual exchange. And they'll just police it instead of calculate it.
They will just police it, but that's how they'll sell it.
Mm.
What they'll say is that, look, guys, this we can all this other economic policy has failed. All of this, you know, all of our efforts so far has failed because we didn't have enough information, guys. So in order for the world to be saved, in order for us to control climate change, we need all information at all times. And if we have all the information at all times, we can finally solve all these problems. Oh, but really, it's just about power. All that does is give them power.
We're talking about bloody Eleanor Ostrom's 8 principles for governing commons. Governing commons. Ugh, the digital commons. Ugh.
Yes.
No, it's just the... I think the thing I really want to grab out of this is there is like one phrase that I just think is like peak technocratic hellscape, or the section at least, the role of digital identity in supporting human agency. Can the use of data intermediaries establish a notion of digital self-determination by helping people navigate technologies and data ecosystem models without losing sight of what it means to be human? In terms of agency and expectations, our digital identities may hold the key to allowing us to determine how we can start to navigate the data ecosystem around us in a more sophisticated manner. And I think that it just continues on, and it's the language around it. I just can't... The idea of digital self-determination, where does that even go?
Well, it's this selling people the economic kind of gilded cage. Not even a gilded cage, it's like the hamster wheel. They'll get treats for interacting with the system. And it's a cliche to call it a social credit score, but that's inevitably what it is. It is a full systemization of all economic activity in a centralized manner. And even they, if you put it in those terms, wouldn't disagree with you. But they'll say, well, here's how that's a good thing. Because the system will be neutral, of course. And it's this whole training idea. It's the way people are trained to not think about the environment around them. That if the average person realized that governmental systems could never be neutral, you cannot have a neutral wielding of power. You cannot wield power in a way that does not, you know, is not at the expense of one group and does not benefit another group. Power and policy is a zero-sum game because we don't live in this magical post-scarcity society they keep pretending is just on the horizon.
Mm.
And that it's dangerous to hand over any level of control to central authority because all they will do is enrich themselves and enrich what they think are their friend groups and destroy their enemy groups. And that has always been the case and always will be the case. There's a horrendous degree of naivety with anyone who buys into the liberal framework. This is one of the problems with it. You'll go, they'll have complete control of the financial system, and they'll go, you're just being paranoid. That's a conspiracy theory. It's not going to be that bad, guys. You know, they're not actually trying to do this. Will never happen. Or you'll get a this will never happen. They could never do that. after they've been locked in their homes for 2 years, taking swabs every 2 seconds so they can get on the fucking bus.
I mean, the thing is, the thing I sort of jokingly mentioned in my article earlier on, though, is that there is no modern social ill that this stuff can't be argued for saving. And I think that that really goes to show how much of what we are in now has been set up to move to where they want us to go to, or at least influenced. I mean, the thing I joked about was, you know, like biometric scans before you go into the toilets to keep the trannies out, or, you know, no ID, no dole to keep the migrants away. But that's literally how it's going to be. You know, tell me how free the point of use of the NHS is when you don't have your QR code with your digital ID and your biometric proof to prove who you are before you, you know, access healthcare. You're having like a pulmonary edema or something like that, you're dying. Please, sir, hand me your digital ID before I resuscitate you.
Yeah, we need to verify you don't have any pathogens that could be dangerous to our collective biological security. Therefore, you need to hand over your digital identity so we can verify who you are and what your medical history is before you can enter this facility. It's also tiresome. It's also very, very tiresome. But it is the way it's going. It's explicitly the way it's going. And it links in, I know you've got links in here about the vaccine passports.
Yeah, and
digital ID
as
well.
We can open that one up as well. This is from Tony Blair Institute for Global Change. One of my favourite websites. I'm browsing this website all the time. I'm probably getting them mad ad revenue. Yeah, the UK government should take the lead on implementing data health passports. Here's why.
It's data health passports. Again, it's all this data-driven, data, crypto, security, democratization. It's a lot of it is blinding buzzword soup.
Yep.
Precisely because they don't want you to know what they're really talking about. A lot of people get extremely confused when crypto is mentioned by design. It is deliberately surface level confusing. And you, like I said, when you talk to and drill down with the crypto bros or whatever, the crypto advocates, they're like, you ask them how does this fix things, and they have no answer for you. They'll link you some like paper somewhere about like how Bitcoin is making, you know, they'll just fall back on stonks, or they'll just throw a bunch of nonsense at you and leave.
See,
they can't answer the very basic question of how does Bitcoin fix this then?
Well, the argument for them was always that you pile up a lot of capital in places where it's not paying tax or doing anything that supports the regime, but obviously that's not the case. And even if it was the case, it still wouldn't work because the regime doesn't need tax; it prints its own money. However,
that is the big equation that a lot of like lolbertarians can't get their heads around. They don't understand that money is actually functionally meaningless.
You can't deprive a state of tax that deprives itself of more tax than it takes in. No, there's a lovely bit of nudge unit stuff here. If we accept that people should be allowed to go back to various elements of their pre-pandemic lives, if they are not likely to spread the virus, then the thing to do is provide a simple, reliable way to prove this. Carrying a laminated vaccination card or taking multiple COVID-19 tests in a day are not tenable solutions in a modern society. Credentials like a vaccination card or a text showing a result are easily faked. Now, they're saying this because they did this. They did set up systems that did that. And they didn't work. And I think from the way that they go on to discuss the further elements, that's deliberate. That, you know, they offer you the crap solution to the next problem, so that when that's, you know, you're not desperate for the solution if the problem doesn't seem so apparent. But when the first solution falls and then you've got a greater problem in your hands, then maybe you are desperate for a solution, and that's when they come in with the thing they actually want to implement on you.
Well, that's the this is all very Crisis and Leviathan. This is all extremely ratcheting effect. It's all very crisis, answer, crisis, answer. And, you know, these the crypto in the background has been training people to trust these digital assets.
Yep.
It's been training people to go beyond the abstraction of digital cash to completely abstracted ideas of cryptocurrency.
Because, I mean,
it really is the complete abstraction of the economy away from any kind of value system.
I mean, there's the line here. The public is increasingly comfortable with the trade-off between protecting our civil liberties and protecting our health. In one recent study, 60% of people said they would want a health pass for them, a health passport for themselves, and another more than two-thirds of respondents supported the use of some form of smartphone tracking app to help manage social distancing. Now, I can guarantee that in that study, the first question that were asked was, would you like to carry around a manual or cardboard form of vaccine pass? Which, of course, the answer would be no. Would you be happy to have an app on your phone? Aye. You know, and before you know it, you've got the perfect data to simulate a mass that is already comfortable with this stuff, which you can then give to the actual mass that isn't comfortable with this stuff, and then they guilt trip themselves into it anyway, because, well, 60% of people said they'd be all right with it, so... is so nudgy in it.
It is extremely nudgy in it, yes. And it's coming from everywhere. That's why people aren't like clocking it, because it's again, it's very boil the frog, but it's so ubiquitous. You have so many different organizations talking about it that it becomes, it, to us, it's very suspicious because we are the noticers. But to the general population, it's very benign. It's like, well, of course we've decided that crypto is the future, because crypto is the future, because my bank is telling me, the government's telling me, my council's telling me, my school's telling me, it's the future, guys. It's digital. It's crypto. It's cool. It's fancy and cyber. That's really all people see.
Mm.
And I think my conclusion as to why so many people have been chilling out online is mostly just stonks and stupidity.
Yeah.
I think, of course, there are influencers, and there is the, you know, it's the elite strata who know what's going on. But everyone beneath it is just either trying to maintain position, look cool, or make stonks.
Yep.
And that really is the long and short of it. And through that, they've managed to embarrass themselves by chilling for the digital panopticon.
Understandably, people are worried about the idea of, well, there's that phrase again, entrusting an app or platform with their sensitive health information. But the technology already exists to allow us to prove our health status while keeping personal data private and secure. Way, the world is saved. The technology already exists. There are many companies...
Is it called the blockchain?
Yeah, there are many companies developing solutions designed to address these worries. Data can be stored by trusted health authorities and on the user's personal device and secured using advanced technologies. For instance, GuardTime's Vaccine Guard uses blockchain technology to ensure that health records can only be accessed or updated by authorized parties. Right from the Tony Blair Institute.
Authorized partners. I wonder who they would be. I mean, anyone who reads any of this should be forced to read the prison files and know what that means.
Yeah.
And know what having your information on a server that the government has access to does. Because if it can be accessed, it will be accessed, and it will be accessed for both the most mundane and the most nefarious reasons. Like what happened with the... like, it's as far back as 2007, the US government had back-end access into Amazon, Google, and they were complaining they didn't have enough access into Apple. This was this was 15 years ago. Imagine what the situation is now.
Mm.
Imagine how much worse it's got since the prison files came out.
Goodness.
And now think about the digitization of your economy and all of your, you know, the digitization of your identity and all of your transactions and your health. And think about the absolute nightmare that must be going on behind the scenes with the security services.
Yeah, there's the another one from the Blair Institute, I believe it's Link 5, why governments and NGOs are behind on blockchain and how to fix that. by Rebecca Liao, probably someone that like works for the CCP, guaranteed.
Most likely. Co-founder. She's some sort of CEO. saga.xyz. God, she does have I'm a CCP person studying the West face, like, in extreme degrees. What is the current state of public sector blockchain deployment? Oh, public sector blockchain deployment. Oh,
I just did the phrase. According to Deloitte's annual blockchain survey, 46% of government officials in 2018 believed that blockchain will be disruptive to their sector and therefore worthy of study and engagement. In 2020, 68% of government officials survey indicated that blockchain would be a strategic priority over the next 2 years, i.e. they get the fucking memo.
How do people think, like, 70% of government officials think blockchain is a strategic priority? How does anyone who's advocating for crypto think they're dissidents?
Well, no, can you imagine, like, some like geriatric, like, House of Lords member trying to explain to you how they are making blockchain their strategic priority? Or some civil service like person that's been working there for 30 odd years and, you know, can barely word process.
It, like I said, a lot of it is buzzword soup. They will never understand the technical realities behind something like the blockchain.
I mean,
because really they are deliberately vague, and nobody really fully understands them because they don't make much sense, because it's actually an extremely useless technology that is deliberately slow and is deliberately calculation hungry by design. It's like they made it wrong on purpose. It's like people are laughing at us if you look at the actual technical details.
No, if you go further here, like, they do it. Given the track record of blockchain and NGO blockchain pilots over the last 4 years, the increase in enthusiasm driven by the stonks-driven retards rather than actual progress and adoption. Inspired by blockchain, governments are seriously considering revolutionary national initiatives to launch central bank digital currencies, or CBDCs. Regardless of whether a CBDC is issued on a blockchain, the technology will need to be core to any program to ensure it is compatible with the wider ecosystem of digital assets, the public sector, blah blah. But this sentence here, that is literally them saying the fact that you fucking retards, well done, you put so much money into that we didn't have to do it. Rather than actual progress and adoption, people wouldn't have used Bitcoin if it wasn't for the bull market in it, or, you know, cryptos in general. It's such a blatant admittance, and I think if you were to show that to people in, again, sort of crypto spheres, and you're like, explain what that means to me, I think they would either just have their heads explode or have to tell you that those words don't mean what they mean.
I just want to quickly address Freeman88 in the chat says all technology can be harnessed for good or evil. I don't really buy into that anymore. I think the idea that technology is neutral is wrong. There are huge amounts of technology that are not neutral and are very clearly designed for a specific purpose. Well, and within, like, the managerial state, you have a huge amount of products and services and ideas that are specifically utilized as societal traps for people. And it's just technology. Technology can't be. Yes, it can. Yes, it can, and you should smash it.
See, I would like to consider the fact that you can't think of technology out of some sort of development of time. You know, you can't think about it in a vacuum. I mean, I wrote a quick thing on this in Telegram the other day. I expect to see more examples like crypto and other tech solutions being used in the same manner by the elites. It's a very simple process that always puts us in the back foot. One, elites institute policy which constrains both organisations and individuals. Two, organisations and individuals attempt to develop technological solutions to recover liberty, or in most cases, lost efficiency, brought about by said policy. Three, elites integrate this new, privately developed technology into a new system of policy which further constrains organisations and individuals. Repeat ad infinitum. I mean, is that not what we're seeing here? Is that not what we've seen time and time again?
Exactly what we're seeing here. And that is the cycle. You end up with, like you said, the public-private partnership. Anything that has come up with by the private sector will inevitably be adopted and bastardized by the public sector because they are in power. And because they are in power, they can do as they please. That's the reality. Like I said, it doesn't actually matter whether Bitcoin at first was an earnest attempt to break out of the mainstream financial system. The result has been that it's being turned into these central bank digital currencies, and all the crypto bros go, that's not real crypto. But it doesn't matter because you don't understand what real crypto is either.
Yeah, real crypto all you do is
post based Elon Musk memes on Twitter and talk about how many stonks you made.
It's way the,
because you're a fucking...
It's way the Elon Musk. It's funny, laugh at it.
Yeah. Bastille Reset says, if tech is so good, why does it literally destroy people's ability to see?
Yeah.
And screen time, like, no matter what they say, does destroy your eyes. And also, I thought you were going to go, if tech is so good, why isn't there a tech 2?
Yeah. But... I'm waiting for the prequel to tech. That would be pretty good.
Yeah.
No, there's just some... great... Yeah, it just continues on while the technocrat language, oh, the consensus mechanism in blockchain is explicit, whereas it is implicit in systems based on traditional centralized databases. In practical terms, that means multiple organizations or individuals compromising a blockchain network have to run part of the infrastructure of that network, known as a node. Blockchain technology is developed to the point that participants in a network can share nodes or can rely on others' nodes to keep the consensus mechanism of the network robust. Even so, such an explicit technological investment means ecosystem members have a higher threshold for participating and will demand more of a say in a blockchain system's features, IP distribution and governance policies. I mean, what that's being discussed there isn't just like a network in the terms of how we would technically understand it, where you have one computer talking to another. This is a network where man and machine is seen as operating perfectly in tandem. You know, this is the, as Alul would talk about, the perfect adaptation of man to the machine and vice versa.
It's also a system in which they can justify action because they're saying it's the will of the users. It's very will of the people. It is pure democracy in its most nefarious form. They can say that the system isn't being driven by the people who designed it and the elites who control it. This is being driven by the users. The users are demanding more digital ID. The users are demanding greater introduction, and they are demanding the removal of the people who won't use the system. It's setting up that kind of Volk for the people, proletariat language that all of the totalizing systems have. It's this idea that, you know, the system is driven by the people, therefore nothing can be purer than the collective will.
Well, there's
a language on display here.
There's an admission here that lines up quite nicely with the point that Larry Fink may or may have not been making. Blockchain pilots can become far too cumbersome when the product goes through an extensive design process in which all stakeholders' input is solicited, which is them admitting that democracy is not a good decision-making system. How interesting. The government agencies running these pilots should instead work closely with their internal stakeholders first, and then two or three key user groups to set the initial product features. The same process can be repeated once successive waves of user groups are onboarded to the platform. Rapid experimentation and iteration with smaller, discrete groups of users is a far more effective method for encouraging users to adopt and execute on a product that will provide true value. When you talk about China, that's essentially, we're going to get Britcoin. Coins made for Brits by Brits, mined by Brits. Oh, it's like when we used to be back down
Britcoin,
the
coin. Bonkers Britcoin.
Yeah.
Bonkers Stormzy Britcoin. Doctor Who bonkers Stormzy Britcoin. It's brilliant. We're going to have that.
NHS NFTs. Fund your local NHS by, scanning your...
Digitally clap for the heroes. Bonkers Global Britain NHS clap... Britain coin.
It's like a really bad, like, Ruddy Hell It's Harry and Paul bit or something.
Someone did a tweet about that the other day. I hate to say someone did a tweet about that, but there was a great one of them being like, bonkers, Stormzy, global. It was just this great word soup, and that's what it's all going to be. Here it is. Here, I will put this on screen because I actually couldn't. I was I was trying not to laugh at like in a meeting at work. I just quickly looked at my phone to get something else and disappears. it's brilliantly British, bonkers, balmy, utterly British, Downton Abbey, Britbox, best of British, digital streaming, Doctor Who, Top Gear, utterly brilliantly British, Great British Bake Off, balmy, bonkers, quintessentially British, steam and fry storms, yeah, Glastonbury, brilliant.
See, this is the thing I put in an article the other week that I wrote about the whole the globalist agenda never stops, and the fact that they'll make it'll be soy grits made by Brits for Brits,
made by Brits for Brits of Brits. Yeah. Yes,
soy grits for Brits, soy Brits.
Oh dear! At some point, we should do another one of these and just call it balmy bonkers Britcoin and something like that. I just the pure unadulterated like modern Britainness of some of this, like the global Britain, Boris Bus, whiff waff,
bonkers Boris Bus Bitcoin bonanza.
Bonkers Boris Bus Britcoin bonanza. Yes, you've named our next crypto stream. But anyone who's not British and doesn't understand what we're talking, people don't understand the.
We'll see the current
British patter.
Barmy bonkers Britcoin brilliant. The article I did today though, the one that settle for less, I had to make sure that wasn't like a DFS thing. Because like in my head, yeah. I was like, DFS, don't settle for less. I was like, that sounds great. That's got to be their marketing.
Yeah. Nah, it's all so tiresome, but this is where we're going. Right, what else do we have to cover then? Because we got to...
I mean, we don't have to. There is a lot of links here. I mean, there is some... I'm trying to remember what this FT piece is. Oh, that FT article doesn't exist anymore. Never mind. This is the thing with some of this stuff. Quite a few of these links are dead because in the last 2 or 3 weeks that I've been looking all this stuff up, they've all been deleted. The page for the World Economic Forum and they list Coinbase as an organization, that link's dead. You can get it to load.
Yeah, there's.
But it just says.
I did check earlier. There's no archive of that either.
Yep.
So.
There is.
Let me see if there's a cached version somewhere. But... Mm.
I mean, there is one from The Verge. Where's this? This is a slightly different thing. This is like them talking about CDBCs, but trying to make them like private. However, I'm not really sure I buy that.
No.
I like the fact as well that they've got an image of Biden here, as if he's like he's part of like the hot seat like finance expert team that's setting this stuff up. There he is. He's looking all chad. He's full of Adderall for half an hour to get him to work for the day.
Oh God, they just pump him full of adrenochrome. Here's one that might say something similar. It's EU-US data wrangle test digital sovereignty.
Oofed.
Brussels unveils push to protect industrial information from foreign governments. Oh God, they're pushing it with the Russians now.
Oh yeah, I can't get that article to load either.
Have you got a problem with the FT then?
Yes.
Huh.
Become an FT subscriber to read this article, which wasn't the case before.
All right, let me get you an archive of that then.
But the article has changed, though. That is not the one that I...
No, it's not. I'm just saying it's a similar one that says similar things. Mm. Here is an archive of that, so you can get it up. There you go. Yeah, how far is the EU prepared to assert its digital sovereignty?
I mean, the thing is, I also had some very interesting stuff from RT News about all the different crypto platforms that had decided that they were no longer going to deal with Russia, which they all acted in lockstep, you know, Binance, Bitcoin, Bitcoin Wallet, all these different exchanges. They just, no, Russia, no more, no, all in unison, you know, very...
You can get that up if you want.
Well, they don't exist anymore because you can't access RT News. And also it's a Telegram post. But there was a Sky News one still that we can go on after this.
There is the Sky News link there. If you want to get that one up, that will be quite useful.
Mm. but you know, this one here from FT, if it's the one I remember it is, but they talk about smart homes and smart washing machines and smart contracts and all sorts of pish. Great. It's got it all.
It's very internet shit.
Yeah. I think as I'm tempted just to start calling it like internet of fuck, just because it's, I don't know if shit's bad enough.
Yeah. It's legal digital sovereignty, blah blah blah, big tech regulation, and the further folding. There's all this like
Uncle's
narrative.
Uncle's Bonanza, big tech, Bitcoin.
Yeah. Big tech, Bitcoin. Sorry, Britcoin protects Brits from big tech. Stuff like yeah, there'll be stuff like that. It's all going to be so tiresome. Oh dear. Now the Scania's one is quite interesting if you want to get it up.
Yep.
Because it is, I think it's one there it is. It's, yeah, they say, could Russia turn to cryptocurrency and cybercrime to dodge sanctions?
Hmm.
Again, they're putting the seed in people's minds that the quote-unquote unregulated cryptocurrencies are the ones that will be used for less cybercrime and less sanctions dodging.
The worldwide wank. That's a good one from chat.
The worldwide wank, internet of shit. Very good. The awful net. The awful net, like, comma, worldwide wank is a pretty strong one. That's I'm liking that vibe there. Thank you, guys.
Well, see, they mention a point that I think very often does not get mentioned, that you know laws requiring cryptocurrency exchanges to verify their customer identity still apply in all jurisdictions of the sanctions have been issued. That's also the case in the UK and America, as far as I'm aware. You actually can't own cryptocurrency unless you want to cold store it, which is a whole big issue in and of itself, trying to sort that nonsense out.
Yeah, the issue again is that Bitcoin is already, if you want to trade it through something like Coinbase, it's already like trading stocks.
Well, see,
it's exactly the same.
I can imagine someone like plugging their, you know, they've got their bitcoins, and how do they even cold store it? Do they copy it into like a big text document, and then Windows like buggers the like file type, and then like your bitcoin's lost because it's now just rich text and it's not Bitcoin anymore? No.
Well, let's get into some of the basic structural issues that no one will ever solve or talk about, and that you have to convert Bitcoin back into fiat currency.
Yes, there is no valuation for Bitcoin that exists outside of its valuation in fiat.
It's literally, it is just stonks. It's a hodl is what it is. It's a great big hodl circle jerk. Are you gonna pay your gas bill in Bitcoin? You're gonna pay for you know, and there's some gimmicky ones where you pay for your house, and there's been some gimmick uses of it. But outside of that, like, you're gonna go to Tesco and pay for your groceries in Bitcoin. You're gonna pay for your, you know, your mortgage in Dogecoin. What, are you a fucking retard?
Well, see, the one I don't get is like the insistence on, especially Bitcoin, as you know, it's got a fixed amount as a currency, and it's only going to be 21 million, which no one really knows if that's going to be true or not. But you also have to consider that what is divisible by like to the 10th digit after the decimal place, and that's a satoshi or whatever it's called. So,
well, that's why the ledger slows down so
well,
much.
Well, the total flow of Bitcoin is not 21 million then. It's, you know, 21 with like 19 zeros after it. How do you even deal with a currency there's that much of?
Like I said, the ledger, the whole ledger thing, the whole blockchain thing is just specifically designed as tracking.
Yeah.
It's massive, bloated, decentralized in a computational sense, tracking into a giant central system. That's all it is, and that makes me suspicious that that's what it was designed for.
God, I love the absolute horrendous intel. They go, according to chainalysis, which is terrible, 74% of global ransomware revenues last year went to Russian affiliated entities, which means 74% of people that committed ransomware attacks last year used a VPN that went to Russia. I mean, like, is that the level of depth that actually exists to any truth in this? Is that as soon as you consider, well, what if that money's just been sent to Russia as an intermediary and the whole thing just falls?
Well, a lot of the stuff is rooted through Russia as a proxy, because Russia, in many aspects, is like essentially Ankapistan in some places.
Yep.
And it's the Russian state is so dysfunctional in some aspects that essentially it doesn't enforce itself in some places and in some aspects of society. That's why you end up with all these things happening. It's nothing to do with it being state-sponsored. It's to do with it being like state-ignored in many cases, because they simply don't have the resources to deal with traffic that is throttled through servers and different bits. They don't care. It's like calling like India a scam state. Mm. You know, a lot of the Indian tech scam stuff happens because India is a barely held together collection of like old kingdoms with a government that can't enforce its will in many places. Sorry?
I forgot how long this article actually was. It's just nonsense about sanctions and, ooh, what if all the Russian oligarchs hide all their money in crypto? Ooh, we're going to have to go after it.
Well, that's the whole point. What they're doing is they're trying to strip the idea of crypto of all the aspects that actually maybe made it, you know, on a surface level workable for dissident action. Mm. What they're doing is they're saying that these are the, you know, Bitcoin will just be labeled the criminal Russia coin. It'll be labeled as sanctioned dodge coin. And here's why we need central bank cryptocurrencies, because Russia can't blow up Ukrainian babies with it.
Well, see, yeah, it reminds me of a lot of the, you know, we need to shut down Tor for extremism and all that kind of nonsense that just isn't true. I mean, the maybe one we can pivot into here is number 13 in the links thing, which is another Blair Institute number. 2019 will be the year of the online extremist and what to do about it. Which is much of a...
the year of the chud.
Yeah, the year of the chad.
I don't know, I love the year of the chud memes that have been going around.
But this is them... This is them almost recognizing the very thing I mentioned earlier on, that you know, whatever new technologies entrepreneurs dream up, extremists will use them in unpredictable ways to spread hate. So we must, you know, they need to get out in the fold and be the first movers.
Well, it's, again, it's the aspect of who gets to decide what isn't extremist. It's basically saying the dissidents are using the things we don't want them to use. Therefore, we need to adopt ever greater systems to shut them out of society. And who isn't an extremist is just so happens to be controlled by us. We define it. It's like, you know, the difference. It's the old saying is the difference between a terrorist and a freedom fighter is whatever the CIA says it is. You know, the difference between an online activist and an online extremist is what the Blair Institute says it is.
Yeah, well, no, they go on to say that, you know, manual reviews or the current content media teams Facebook uses and other methods don't tackle hate and so on and so forth. So observers can fully expect to finally see commercial applications of blockchain technology. Hey, that one again.
Hey.
After several false starts and overblown promises. One of the uses of this distributed ledger technology will be decentralized, hard to censor social media and broadcast platforms. A blockchain social media platform would be untouchable. No government would be able to edit or remove hate speech, illegal images, or terrorist propaganda.
Unless the whole would be able to host it, because it would bloat itself so heavily. But anyway.
Unless the whole network were somehow vaporized. In 2019, the police will look back fondly on the big tech companies and how they follow the law. With decentralized blockchain networks, legislators might as well pass laws to change the orbit of the moon. And what are you writing this article for? Because that's basically what you're asking.
Yeah. Well, that's what they do. They make an unworkable system, and then they make an even more unworkable solution.
See, the thing I find interesting to talk about, you know, late 2017 saw the rise of so-called deepfakes, such as the application of face-swapping algorithms that allow campaigners to put words into their opponents' mouths. A recent report on AI and security threats warned that in future, AI-enabled high-quality forgeries may challenge the seeing-as-believing aspect of video and audio evidence. One likely use will be the automatic machine generation of content. Certainly large companies will have already shown signs of researching automatic generation of adverts, blah, blah, blah. To me,
Well, there's the
unironically,
three. Sorry, go
I
on.
was going to say, to me, unironically, the solution to this will be NFTs. That there will be an NFT of your face if you're a public figure. And the way they do it in China, they have your face copyrighted so that for your own protection, so that your appearance isn't used against you in media. But conversely, also now the government owns your face, so that if you want to show your face in
Literally.
media, you can't. And if the government wants to use it to misconstrue the public perception of who you are, then, there was someone saying, I'm surprised the thumbnail wasn't just a big Peter Schiff face. That's true, but Peter Schiff never really talked about the technocratic part, which is why I didn't mention him earlier. I probably should. He was big on the bubble aspect, which I think is true. I mean, I think if you were to track, say, the growth in the total crypto market cap as a correlated function to, I don't know, maybe the gross spending of the American Federal Reserve or something like that, you would find quite the correlation between the two.
Yes, you. This is an aspect I wanted to go into because crypto is being. You don't know where the growth in quotes is being driven from, even without the involvement of large organizations or possibly even central banks. A lot of it has been driven by people using it to burn inflation. Essentially, they put their steemies in it, and you've got really is crypto going up as almost like an inflation measure. It's gaining in value in quotes because the dollars it's made up of are losing value. And what you're actually seeing partially is the horrendous effects of the money printer being funneled into it like a fire hose. And a lot of people don't have the wherewithal to understand why that might be happening.
See,
It's
they go very mask off here. This is, I think, a part of this I wanted to remember. Sorry, I didn't want to interrupt you because I think the point probably does need to be made that so much of the value in crypto is just inflation, like pure and utter inflation. And if anything, it is acted as a general deflationary pressure against the inflation that would otherwise have happened. I mean, this is a thing we said to each other. When a lot of the Wall Street bet stuff was going on, as if they'd taken all the money from Wall Street bets and buggered about with the silver market or the gold market, we'd be in a completely different situation now than we were
We would.
then. Anyway, second, given the dynamics outlined above, governments must accept that they will never be able to remove extremist content entirely. The approach, therefore, needs to be smart, making large strategic interventions rather than a constant whack-a-mole and demonization of platforms. One example is the largest successful way the police has dealt with darknet markets. Rather than trying to remove these sites entirely, several police services around the world have collaborated to infiltrate them and, at carefully chosen intervals, make large-scale arrests and takedowns. This has sown doubt among the criminals opening on the darknet, and by watching closely how they respond to arrests, the authorities have learned more about their tactics, strengths, and weaknesses, i.e., basically expect a special demonstration squad to be started up again.
Yeah, they're basically talking about digital Stasi, that every network they consider even vaguely distant will be pumped full of thousands of security agents. You'll have a massive machinery whose job it will be to monitor the online thoughts of the distant networks. And that's why things like Parler and Getter and places like that have transparently been such fed ops, because you end up with Hoteps being banned from Getter for saying nigger. Even without the Hana, even with the A, even in the I was just quoting rap lyrics f function, all of these places are a joke, and you shouldn't buy into any. A lot of people are like, alt tech's gonna save us, guys. It's like, no, if it's allowed to get anywhere near off the ground, if it doesn't get like what was the BitChute was one that was genuine and then got basically hamstrung because the was it the UK broadcasting authorities came in and basically told it needs to be regulated like a TV channel, which no other like video platform has ever done, ever. They said if it truly has distant power, they can come in and shut it down at a moment's notice. But yeah, what they're talking about here really is just infiltrating your life and infiltrating the lives of everyone online who they consider a threat is an extremely like nefarious thing to suggest here that will re require like immense manpower. Because they just want you to be surrounded by their agents. It's It's very disturbing because that's what it is, a euphemism for actual digital Stasi. Have we gone past the three-pronged approach bit yet? Because that bit is
yeah, we can go back to
disturbing.
That if you want.
Yeah, where it says about a three-pronged approach, it talks about using AI to automatically spot content that will continue to be important, but it will never be enough to deal decisively with the problem as complex as its content. But technology will be a valuable to spot deepfakes, blah, blah, blah. Investment in these countermeasures should therefore be scaled up. Where possible, be a partnership between companies. Yeah, here we go. A partnership between companies and governments. It's the private-public partnership. Because the commercial sector will have both the data sets and capabilities to lead the way. Again, they're talking Facebook, give data so we can suppress. Yeah, one good example is photo DNA developed in the private sector is used to identify illegal images of. Basically, they're talking about turning child porn into NFTs.
Yeah.
And policing it that way. But that can be used against anything. They're basically talking about turning distant memes into NFTs then as well. Second, give the dynamic outlined governments. Must accept. Yeah, yeah, that's the bit before. You talked about. Yeah, but it's the first part they talk about is we scale up the AI, we level up the machine gods, and they will do the bulk of, you know, they will filter it, and then the Stasi will do the rest.
Yep. For the sake of, I don't know, I find it kind of interesting. Shall we have a one last look at the Telegraph article? Number 19.
Yeah, we can have one final for 19.
Because I'll be honest, I need to pee quite badly.
But
I can go on for a little bit more.
Britain, here we go. Britain being forced to go cashless against its will. Oh, it's very Telegraph article. 1 in 5 would struggle in cashless world and prefer notes and coins. I mean, the Tory graph has a bit of indignation here, but like, what are they going to do about it?
The thing is, I think it's one of those ones, it's almost like the ritual humiliation stuff. It's like it's already happened, and they're trying to, you know, they're playing the victim to it, they're not playing the countenance to it. It's like, this is bad and it's happening, and accept it.
Yeah.
Britain is becoming a cashless society against the public's will, a new major study has found, after the pandemic accelerated the switch to card and digital payments. It accelerated the switch, so what you're admitting is there was already an agenda for doing that.
Yeah. It's just natural, guys. People naturally get more left-wing, and people naturally just use digital currency more, guys.
Yeah.
It's all neutral and natural. And y'all conspiratorially if you say otherwise.
Yeah, around 10 million people or 1 in 5 adults would struggle to manage in a society without cash. A report from the Royal Society of Arts commissioned by Cash Machine Network Link found. Oh, the evil Cash Machine Network.
Yeah.
Sorry.
It's all a conspiracy by Big Cash Machine.
You cut out for a second there. You were very buzzy. I'm not too sure what you said. You still there?
No, I think my connection's gone funny.
F. They're shutting us down, we've said too much. Oop. Yep, I think we may have a dead connection. I don't know, the stream hasn't died, so I'm going to presume chat can still hear.
That was sick. It's my big cash money.
Is that? It's intermittent
Discord,
John.
Discord is being a bit funny.
Yeah, I think yeah, a few things have been funny this evening. The stream was dropping out a little bit earlier on as well.
Internet's fine. I think it's okay. I think it's okay now. I think, like I said, it's not. I think it's Discord, honestly. If I'm not cutting out anymore. They detected the gamer word detected.
It seems better now. Yeah, the older generation in particular is being left behind. One in three people dependent on cash are above 65. Some 4 million of those would struggle. Most without cash are over 65 years old. Ah, who cares? Fuck the old people.
Well, they're focusing as well purely on the the utilitarian practical aspects here.
Yeah.
And there's no mention here of the, again, this, the, you're right, ritual humiliation and containment. This is both. They're making the, oh, people, old people might struggle because they're not equipped for our new modern, they're actually making a cashless society sound modern and new. And well, that people, you know, their whole thing is, oh, people will be left behind by the cashless society. Not, they're creating a digital panopticon in which they will monitor every transaction, feed it to an AI that will alert the police if your spending habits become something that they think they need to be worried about. There's none of that in this whatsoever.
Yeah, they mentioned cash machines are also disappearing. The number of free cash points has fallen by a quarter since January 2018. Whose decision was that? Was that the decision of the cash machine companies? I don't remember ever seeing, you know, like, cash machine companies going broke. I never heard about that. So why, you know, I wonder what actually fuels a decision like that. Because, I mean, where we are, where I am at the moment, where we will be tomorrow, there's like one cash machine. Maybe two.
Yeah.
And that's it. I mean, the one that used to be elsewhere further down the street is gone. So there's just two. And it was the same where I used to live in Stirling before. There was one side of town where there was two or three cash machines, and then, you know, next to the banks. And the other side of town was bugger all.
It'd be a great idea to figure out what is actually driving this. Because I don't know if it's market led. I can't see the reason because people do still use them.
The lack of bank branches has made it more. The lack of bank branches has made it more difficult for retailers to deposit or access notes and coins, which in turn has nudged some retailers and restaurants into refusing cash altogether.
Well, no. What's actually happened, I know this, I heard it, well, I saw it, a tweet from one of our local breweries, actually. They said that they are considering the fact that they might not be able to afford to take cash, in their tap room anymore, because the banks are levying ever heavier fees on cashing, especially in coins.
Yep.
Like they're taking ridiculous fees from people who are trying to deposit in cash. That's where a lot of this is coming from. Cash isn't being used by businesses because businesses are being heavily penalized by banks for dealing in cash.
Well, we must be about a year out from the pool table and the pub taking fivers. Contactless the pool table. Ah!
Oh no! Now I saw that. I think they deleted it. I like caught like a fleeting tweet about that, about the fact that they're considering not being able to take cash anymore because there's something stupid like a 14% levy on coins, and that they can't go to a local. And anyway, because all the bank branches have closed in our town, they have to drive basically into like the next town over to cash it in, and are being charged exorbitant fees for doing so.
Ugh.
Yeah, the reason there's so few cash machines is just because there's huge penalties employed by the banks for using cash.
Mm.
The banks want to destroy cash. That it's being led by the big banks, and those are obviously funded by the central banks. So it's very centralized. I had kind of an oh moment when I saw that. I knew it was happening, but to hear businesses actually say it is something else. So,
well, it's one of those very in the know things. Like, what is the percentage carryover of, you know, costs for actually handling cash?
Sorry?
No, it is one of those things, though. It's only something you would know if you were in that industry. And
oh yes,
regards to what the cost is of handling cash.
It's like when people had a massive argument with AA about procurement and about the fact that what is put on store shelves isn't actually the decision generally of the public.
No.
And none of the products, you know, the product ranges that you want or, you know, that you might want will be given to you, even if there's a massive market demand for it. Because generally food is created by a handful of extremely large companies, and these large companies basically tell the supermarkets what they will and will not be ordering.
Someone in chat talking about crypto is just a small way to protect yourself from debasing of fiat. not true. Real crypto advocates also advocate for cash for transactions, which means that crypto is so good that you have to use shit fiat money to bolster how good it is.
We already have a store of value. It's called gold.
I mean, see, the thing I always find, and I can tell that this is one of the things that's irked me as well about a lot of the crypto stuff. It has allowed a lot of entryism into the Austrian economic circle. And those people really don't know what they're on about still. And they talk about crypto and money and they say, well, it's better than gold because there isn't a gold exchange in the sense that they look at it. And for some extent, that's true. But that also means that you can just carry about, like, you know, a bag full of gold ounce coins and just go and buy what the hell you want at a price that you and some person agree on privately. And no other person needs to know about the transaction, which is the most important part.
In certain circles, if you offer to transact in gold, you'd have your hand snatched off because it's difficult to get hold of.
Well, yes.
If you were somebody who in the 70s and 80s, or even as early as like the 1950s when it was possible, hoarded a massive amount of gold, you are basically a financial god.
Mm.
And no one will, you know, you could have to negotiate with it, but no one will ever refuse a transaction with you in like upper echelon circles in gold, because it is quite literally like one of the most valuable things you can offer people, because it's not been banned like it was in World War II or prior to World War II in the New Deal era, but it is very, very close to. It's almost impossible to buy gold.
All I'm saying is bars of gold don't lose value when the power goes out. If anything, they go up.
Yes. it's all so tiresome. Anyway, you should probably go for your pee.
Yeah, no, I did think we were sort of winding down anyway at the moment.
We are currently winding down. Thank you guys for your questions. I've not seen any donations come through, but sometimes that's just the way it is. We have had a couple of, where is it here? We have had a couple of people become members. I can't find those right now though, but I might thank them in a community post. Streamlabs is currently hanging. Not during this stream, I mean in between streams.
Mm.
We've had people become members. I can see it in the little events log here thing. But yeah. Be more critical of crypto. Yes. Or at least view it more critically.
On a grander scale, don't expect technology to save you.
Yes, that is the real takeaway here. There is no technocratic solution to technocracy. You can't systematize your way out of a systematized world. That's the lesson we'd be trying to teach people, and that was the big thing I tried to put in my technocrats article.
Hmm.
You know, there's no technocratic solution to technocracy. There really isn't. And cryptocurrency, and especially magic blockchain, is basically where to lock people into a permanent ledger of every action they've ever done ever on the internet. So, and also make them do the processing for it.
I just wanted, for one final time, say I told you so to very many people.
Anyway, thank you for tuning in, guys. Do check out our Substack at antipolitics.substack.com. We will be putting stuff up there semi-frequently. There'll be a stream on Monday.
Yes, we'll be streaming with Panama Hat. And yes, we'll be discussing, I think I'll probably title the stream something along the lines of what actually is liberalism. And we'll be having a somewhat free-form discussion about the parts of liberal theory that seem to go completely unmentioned in a lot of the distant circles, and why, for a number of reasons, just sort of turning your nose up at things and going, ugh, liberalism is, it seems to me like a massive intellectual faux pas.
Yeah.
And Hat seemed very up for that discussion when I suggested it to him when we were at Nomos the other week, so that should be rather good.
Well, we'll see you guys on Monday, and have a good night.
See ya.